ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around telling him he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. Two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Everybody, welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span. This is episode number 170 of the report, and right now we're rocking out to some old ass Dr. Dre, the Chronic, Little Ghetto Boy. Rock out with your boy. Yes, indeed, man. We are here on the Monday night. Typically, we do this on Sundays, but, you know, Game of Thrones was on, man. I had to watch that shit just like y'all did. So, yeah, we had to push this back, man. We on here on the Monday night, chilling out, man. I felt a little nostalgic, man. I was watching The Defiant Ones, man, and that shit was really good. Y'all should really check that out. It's about Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre and their relationship and how it's grown and how it is manifested now with, like, over $1 billion in their empire or whatever. But it was a really good 4-hour documentary. It was like a 4-part series on HBO, and I encourage everybody to go actually check that out, man, real talk. Let me turn this down here. Turn that off, actually. Yeah, man. But yeah, that's going on, man. I actually sat up and I watched that, man, and it was one of those things, man. Like, we've been talking about, like, growth and reconciliation and recognizing when one fucks up and stuff, like, especially as we've been talking about Jay-Z and the 444 album and whatnot. And it was actually pretty cool to see Dr. Dre sit up there and admit how wrong he was for abusing Dee Barnes in the way that he did. Now, I'm not going to say that how Dee Barnes receives that is up to her. But I think it's important that he acknowledge what the fuck was wrong with him. I think it's important for him to acknowledge how wrong he was in that situation. And it's one of those times where when niggas was talking about why they bring this stuff up. Because you have to understand, like, the whole thing with Dr. Dre assaulting Dee Barnes that came out it came up, her and Michelle, it came up around the time that the movie Straight Outta Compton was coming out, and folks were upset at Dee Barnes and Michelle for even bringing up the fact that, yo, this dude whooped our ass and here he is, this movie, and there's no mention of this whatsoever. This is part of the history of Dr. Dre. This is a part of the history of NWA. This is a part of the history of Death Row or Ruthless Records. And this should be, you know, attention should be brought to this issue. And, yo, man, the man apologized, man. The man said that he was wrong and stuff like that. Now, again, everybody's not going to necessarily accept that apology, but I do think it was big of him to go ahead and issue that apology and acknowledge that he was wrong. And, yeah, man, so I thought that was pretty cool. Real talk. But, you know, before we get into the rest of the show, man, of course, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Spare Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. I will play them on the show. Excuse me. And I will respond to you here on the show as well, man. You can also email me here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those emails. Of course, I'll read those emails here live on the show, respond to them live on the show. And I'm gonna kind of like allude to some shit that happened on the last show that I want to talk about. But yeah, man, email me here at thespanreport.com. feedback@thespanreport.com. Go ahead and send those emails, and of course I'll read those here live on the show, man, and respond to you. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span, so go ahead, follow me there. It's what we do, man. We talk shit throughout the week, and some of the stuff we talk about on the show, some of the stuff that's happening in the pop culture, go ahead and follow me and we can chop it up together, man. On Twitter and Instagram, my name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span, so go ahead, do that, follow me there. Also, iTunes and or Stitcher reviews, 5 stars preferably. Those get read here on the show. It's very much appreciated. It helps the show grow. It helps other people know what's going on over here at the Spare Report. Please do that. Please do that. I really do appreciate everybody who takes the time to give those 5-star reviews, man. They're very much appreciated. And for all of your Spare Report needs, go to www.thespanreport.com. You can watch the show as we do this live here on Crowdcast, because you know you can watch the show on Crowdcast too, right? You can watch me do this show live. You can participate in the chat room on Crowdcast. You can vote in the polls, call into the show live by watching this show on Crowdcast. But in order to do that, in order to get everything else squared away, go to www.thespanreport.com. I fucked that up. Go to www.thespanreport.com for all of your Spare Report needs, man. Vote in the polls, watch the shows, listen to the shows, download the shows, leave comments. You can donate to the show if you'd like, as much as you like, as often as you like. It's all very much appreciated here at the Spare Report Podcast. And yeah, man, that's your one-stop shop for everything Spare Report. Everything is pretty much available there. So go there for all of your Spare Report needs. Oh, and you know what? That's not it. The Spare Report group, man. The Spare Report official Spare Report podcast listener group is available now on Facebook. So if you guys are interested in joining the Facebook fan, you know, the fan group for listeners of the Spare Report, man, look for the Spare Report hashtag TSRP the fam. That is the official group of the Spare Report podcast on Facebook. So go there, send me those if you want to get in and you're listening to the Spare Report, man. Of course, man, just go ahead, ask for the entry. And for all the listeners, man, y'all get in, man. This is, like I said, I want it to be a congregation spot for the listeners to talk amongst themselves about some of the things that we talk about here on the show. And I'm in there as much as anybody, but yeah, man, go ahead and just be free, man. Talk about what we talked about on the show. Talk about pop culture, sports, whatever, man. All the listeners of the Spare Report are welcome in the Spare Report Facebook group, man. So go ahead and join that, boy. It's very much appreciated for those of you who take the time to do that as well, man. So yeah, we got that going on. But yeah, man. So I was talking about the whole Dr. Dre shit or whatever. I was watching that, but I had another incident kind of happen over this weekend, right? I was accosted by the motherfucking police, man. And so here's what happened. I'm in the middle of cutting my grass, right? I'm in the backyard, I'm cutting grass and whatnot, and then I realized that I don't have enough compost bags to get rid of my yard waste. And so I was like, all right, let me run up to Lowe's really quick. I'm going to go grab some more compost bags so I can get back to my, you know, maintaining the property, right? And so on my way to Lowe's, I blew a stop sign, man. I didn't see the stop sign at all. I did not see it whatsoever. And it was just my motherfucking luck that the police was there and they saw me blow through that stop sign, right? So they pulled me over, and at this particular moment, your man Span was carrying, right? I had my gun on me. I had my gun on me, and like first thing I did, man, I rolled all the windows down, even the sunroof. I opened that bitch up, and I put my arms out of the window. Put both of my arms out in the window. And the officer walks up to me and he's like, you know, do you know why I pulled you over? And honestly, I was like, no, sir, I don't, you know. And he says, well, you blew through a stop sign back there. And I said, you know, well, I didn't see a stop sign. I'm not saying that there isn't a stop sign there. I didn't see it. And so he asked me, was I carrying? Because as you know, or for those of you who aren't familiar, for those of us who are licensed to carry a concealed firearm, when the police decide to run your license plate on your car and that car is registered to you and you're licensed to carry concealed, that information comes up on the computer as well. They know you have it. At least they know you have the license. You may not necessarily have the gun with you, but they know you're licensed to carry. So he asked me about the gun. He asked me, did I have it with me? I said, yes, I do. And he asked me where it was. And I told him where it was. And he asked me, where's my wallet? And I said, well, my wallet is in my left pocket. He said, well, could you get that for me? I said, I would much rather you get that for you. Right? I would much rather get out of this car and allow you to go in these pockets and grab this wallet. Right? So I get out of the car. And, you know, he didn't even, like, the weird thing about this exchange, man, is, like, this dude, after I told him where the gun was, he never asked for my gun. He asked for my gun license. He asked for my driver's license. Didn't even ask me for the insurance on my car. And the whole time I'm just like, you know, I didn't know about the stop sign or whatever. I didn't see it. And he's like, you know, how long have you lived around here? You know, that was one of the questions, because my driver's license still had like my old address on. He's like, how long have you lived around here? I said, it's been like a few months or so. And he said, well, you know, there's a stop sign right here behind this tree. It's probably really hard for people to see it because the tree's right there and it's overgrown, but there's a stop sign there. You should be aware of it. And I said, okay, yeah, you're right. I should be aware of it. You know, I'm trying to make this stop as smooth as possible, right? And so while this conversation is going on, his partner is giving my car to once over, right? So I drive a Pontiac G8, right? They don't make that car no more. I wish they did. The successor to that car, they're about to stop making that, right? But the guy, his partner is looking over my car and he's like, man, we were just talking about G8s, man. He's like, you like this car? And I said, well, I'm looking for something new, but yeah, it's all right, you know. He said, man, these fuckers are fast, man. They're really fucking fast. And I'm like, okay, yeah, what you said, right? And he's looking at my license plate. And on my license plate, there is like a decal for my union, the union that I belong to at work. And he says, well, you work for a union? I said, I don't work for a union, but I work for a company, you know, where I'm represented. And he says, well, they make pretty good money there, don't they? I said, well, we do all right. You know what I'm saying? Like, so he's like, well, you got any ID for the company you work for? And I thought that was an odd question to ask. You know, here I am. I got a commercial driver's license. I got a concealed pistol license. And you're asking me about my employment and can I prove where I'm employed during this traffic stop about me blowing a stop sign. I thought it was real odd. And he asked, you know, I showed him my ID and he's like, oh, well, you must be one of the good ones. You know, they don't let just anybody work there. You know, like you got to go through some stuff to get in there, don't you? I said, man, I just filled out an application and I got hired, man. Anything else after that, they taught me how to do, you know? So like not trying to be a dick about it, but that's just what happened. But he's like, well, you know, obviously, like, you know, he's like, man, look, there's a stop sign there. Don't pass, you know, don't blow past this sign anymore. Here's your license. Here's your license. Here's your gun license. You're free to go. Okay. You sure? Everything's on the up and up. Because, again, they never took my gun off of me. None of this stuff. And he's like, no, you're free to go, man. You're pretty good. And I thought, like, here's the thing, man. One, I was grateful to have that interaction go as, like, frictionless as possible, right? Grateful for that. Another thing I thought, like I said, I thought it was weird that this dude decided that the only reason he was going to let me off with a warning, because that's ultimately what they said, was I was being let off with a warning because of where I worked. And I was wondering, like, well, damn, if I didn't have a job with this particular company, if I didn't have a job that you thought paid decent money, would I have gotten a ticket? Like, if I worked at McDonald's, if I worked at fucking Jiffy Lube, would you have issued a ticket in that moment? Like, were you looking at my car thinking that, like, okay, maybe because I work at this place, this allows me to afford this car, even though this car is damn near 10 years old and they don't make it no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like I'm riding around super duper flashy. Like, it was weird. It was fucking weird. And in a time where we're dealing with issues like, you know, what happened with Philando Castile being a concealed carrier and you know, that not saving him from an interaction with the police officers, that was playing over and over and over in my mind as this traffic stop was happening. And it's one of the reasons why the first thing I did was throw both my hands outside of that fucking car window. Now, one of the things about this, man, is that I want to make this plain, and I want to make this clear, is that despite the fact that, you know, like, this traffic stop happened and I was able to walk away from it and I'm able to tell you guys a story about it today, in no way, shape, form, or fashion will you ever see me on the mic or anywhere else talking about, well, this is how you get away from the police officers. This is how you do it. If you want to walk away alive, this is how you do it. It's like, no. No, because that does not exonerate all of the times we've seen police go above and beyond their fucking call of duty in order to take the life of somebody or a person of color when they didn't have to. When they didn't have to. Those interactions happen far too often. The only thing I was thinking about was getting home or getting to where I was, like, let's get this over and done with. Make this as painless as possible. No friction, none of that. Like, that's the only thing I was thinking about. Now, another thing that I was that I thought was, you know, kind of weird, like, you know, he said, like, one of the good ones. Like, he got a good job. Maybe he's about something. And it was the whole thing of, like, the respectability politics. And maybe I was a beneficiary of the respectability politics where he thought that, you know, this is somebody respectable. This is somebody who's legitimate and all these other things. And therefore, he decided that he wasn't going to fuck with me in this particular moment. He was going to let me off with a warning, which really was the only thing that probably should have happened anyway because of the way that the sign was obstructed. Like, okay, the sign's there. I see it now. I'll be aware of it later on. That's really all it really required. It didn't require a ticket or anything like that. But to say that I was one of the good ones because of where I worked, I thought was odd. I thought it was strange. These little things, man, and like the whole time I'm thinking about Philando and not becoming a possible another Philando Castile. It was just something, this just happened, man. Like, I came back home and got back to cutting my grass. But it was just, it was weird. It was weird, man. Like, I've had a whole lot of traffic stops, especially since I got that fucking G8. I've been stopped quite a bit. But it was one of the few times where I was stopped and I was carrying in that car. And, yeah, man, I was scared. I'm just going to put it like that. I should not have been, but I was. And it was, yeah, I mean, we're here talking about it today, but I thought that was weird, man. Yeah, so enough about that shit, right? Another thing that I kind of wanted to kind of go back into And this has something to do with the last episode that I did with, which was, what was the name of that episode? Shit, I don't remember the name of the last episode. Oh, well, episode 169. You can see it on the podcast feed or whatever. But there was the email that I got from Tremaine, right? And I responded to that email from Tremaine. And I went back and I listened to that particular episode, and I wasn't necessarily proud of the way that I handled that. Although what I was saying was probably factual and correct, I wasn't proud of the way in which I handled that email. I was going off the larceny, maybe, right? It's kind of going off the larceny. But I think I gave that more than it really required. As far as like the emotion that I put into that response, I think I gave it way much more than it required. And I think Tremaine probably got what he was expecting of me, as far as, or better yet, what he wanted, pretty much. Not necessarily expected, but he got what he wanted. He got a rise out of spam. And sometimes when it comes to, you know, listening to feedback, especially when it isn't necessarily positive, when it isn't necessarily glowing, sometimes trolling, I think a lot of times it is for the sheer purpose of getting a rise out of the host, getting a rise out of anybody who's going to read it, who's directed to, and everything else. And so I kind of gave into that. Not necessarily wanting to, but I kind of did. And one of the things I kind of wanted to say about it was, of course, like I actually posted that email on my social media, and I was kind of talking about, I was talking about how disrespectful it was, and other people were talking about how disrespectful it was. But there was a few people who I would probably say maybe even agree with what Tremaine had to say. You know what I'm saying? Like, they maybe even agree with, like, yo, man, like, you know, maybe Tremaine's right. Right? Now, these are people who may be friends, maybe even family. And reason I say that they may even agree with Tremaine was only because, like, some of the responses that I was getting was, well, you can't expect everybody to agree with you, right? Now, I'm going to say this, man. I've been doing this podcast going on, what, damn near 7 years now. That's a lot of hours of me talking pretty much out into the ether, man. Like, there's nobody really here with me while I'm doing this recording. I'm just kind of recording and thinking, like, basically verbalizing my thoughts to you guys, and you listen, and I appreciate you listening to them. But I am not under any illusions that everything I say on this mic, that everybody who listens to me agrees with everything I say. There's some, you probably agree with most of the things that I say on here, and that's probably why you come and you listen and you enjoy the show. But yeah, I'm not under any illusions that everybody agrees with 100% of what I say here. And I've always stressed the need for, if you're going to say anything here that maybe you disagree with me on something, there's nothing wrong with disagreeing with someone and being respectful in your ways of disagreeing. And calling me a jealous broad is disrespectful. And if we were face to face, you'd probably get smacked in the fucking mouth. Right? As with anybody. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's like just going to take you verbally assaulting them in that way lightly. Referring to my relationship with my father. Really none of his fucking business. But of course, like, I am I've been an open book on this show, man. I've spoken about that relationship before. So I responded in the way that I did. But one of the things I'll say is this, man, is especially concerning some of the people in which Tremaine was writing in about, whether that be LeVar Ball, Dr. Boyce Watkins, Umar Johnson, Tariq Nasheed, Wesley Muhammad. There's this contingent, like, there's this idea with a lot of brothers when you talk about these dudes, they feel as if white people are already coming down on those dudes and they like those dudes. So they don't necessarily appreciate somebody who looks like them, another brother coming at those dudes also. Even though what I may be saying might have some factual information behind it. Right? So, like, the whole thing with LeVar Ball, yeah, man, as I said on the last show, He is not indicative of black fatherhood in America. He is not the only representative of black fatherhood in America. And I think it's sad that it's so many brothers who think that, like, LeVar Ball represents great black fatherhood. No, LeVar Ball to me represents a loudmouth. LeVar Ball to me represents a showboat. LeVar Ball to me looks as if he's piggybacking, or better yet, trying to jump in front of the fame that his son's talent is garnered for that family. You know, now I was never critiquing LeVar Ball's fathering skills. I'm critiquing LeVar Ball being a buffoon on media, social media, and everything else for the sake of publicity. And I know a lot of people would say, like, no, all publicity is good publicity and all this other shit. Like, LeVar Ball's got this master plan. Like, yeah. Y'all giving this dude way too much credit to me, right? The idea about Tariq Nasheed. Tariq Nasheed is someone who I used to listen to at one point in time. Again, man, yo, I keep telling y'all, man, I wasn't always this dude. But there was a time where I listened to Tariq Nasheed. And there was a time where I thought his show was funny. It was a time where, like, this was around the time he was doing the Mac Lessons radio show, and dudes was calling this guy, asking him for relationship advice on how to get with women, how to have sex with women and stuff. He's promoting Mr. Lucario dude, and he's talking about how to have sex with beautiful women and all this other shit. And I would just listen to these dudes call this dude, and they're asking him how they can get at these women. I thought that kind of shit was funny. I would listen to that shit like, I can't believe these niggas. Because they were eating that shit up. And I thought he was kind of funny in some of his interactions. But then there was the switch to, he's going to start telling the history of black people. And he's doing the Hidden Colors series and things like that. And you started looking, I started seeing some of the shit that he would say. And it'd be like, whoa. You know, some of the shit that I used to think was funny, after being exposed to the other side of that, especially in terms of how women were receiving that and how women were on the receiving end of some of the shit that Tariq Nasheed was telling these dudes to come at them with, it kind of was like, this might not necessarily be the shit that I would rock with. And then it became a progressive thing. Like, it got progressively worse and worse, to the point where, like, now he's putting out these videos, these Hidden Colors videos, with a lot of cherry-picked history, a lot of fall history, a lot of questionable interpretations of history. And people were starting to look at this dude like he was a legitimate historian, as if we didn't just see him not even 6 months ago talking about he was a pimp, player be played, Mac Lessons, and all this other shit. Now, I'm not saying that nobody can grow. As you listen to me on this show, you've listened to some growth. You've listened to me kind of switch and change some of my ideas on stuff. I think the difference between me and someone like a Tariq Nasheed is, I really believe the shit that I'm saying. I believe Tariq Nasheed says the shit that's going to get him paid. He wants you to buy those Hidden Colors movies. He wants you to help pay for this, that social network that he was trying to, More Us and all that other shit. He wants you to help him get that shit off the ground. Like, there's always a sort of hustle and associated with that. Now, I'm not even knocking trying to get bread, but when you're knocking, when you're misinforming the people in order to do it, I find issue with that. And much the same way that I find issue with Umar Johnson. I find issue with Umar Johnson and the fact that Umar Johnson is a known homophobe, a known misogynist, a known liar. There is no documentation of this dude. He does not have a PhD. You don't have to renew a PhD. His dissertation is not on public record. You cannot read it, although there's a link to a supposed dissertation from him. It isn't there. His links to Frederick Douglass are questionable at best. And I don't necessarily, I don't fuck with him. Like, I listen with a critical ear. And much the same way that I listen with a critical ear with Boyce Watkins. Now, I hear a whole lot of folks say, well, you know, some of his black economic empowerment stuff is real good, Span. Like, you know, you should probably, you know, listen to some of the stuff he's saying. I'm like, yeah, it may be. But then he also sprinkles in this respectability politics that I don't fuck with. And see, here's the thing that I think that I think, like for myself and with a lot of my friends and maybe even my family, maybe even some of you guys, man, who listen to the show, as you notice the diff, like the change over the years when it comes to me and when it comes to this show, is that, and I've said this before, people come into their own understandings in their own times. And I came into my understanding of how I view the world now over the course of the last few years. And sometimes when you have some sort, like sometimes when you have an epiphany or when you have something that clicks and is like, you realize that some of the things that you grew up with and some of the ways in which you thought was bullshit, when you realize that, and then you realize how what you thought and how you behaved, how it affected other people. Once you see that, and once you recognize that, when you see instances of that being promoted, it kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth, right? It leaves a bad taste in your mouth when you see that, especially if it's a genuine change. If it's genuine and you really believe in the things that you believe in now, and you recognize that some of the ways in which you grew up and some of the things that was taught to you and some of the things that may have been ingrained in you was bullshit. It when you see it come up and when you see people promoting it and when you see people like just kind of like throwing it out there, it's hard for the people around you to get it, especially if they're in the same space. Because for them, they're looking at you like, damn, he was cool with this for a while. What happened? What changed? And then they'll start to make you, or they'll look at you and they'll say, oh, you think you better than me? Or you acting funny. And it's not about acting funny. And it's not about thinking that you're better than anyone else. You're in a different space. Mentally, you're in a different space. Certain things that you used to like, you don't necessarily like anymore. Certain behaviors you used to engage in, you don't engage in anymore. And I noticed, like for me, it's caused a rift in a lot of friendships and relationships, even amongst family. Like some of the ways I think and talk about the way I think and talk about shit a lot of times rubs folks the wrong way. And like I said, I know I've come across as preachy to a lot of folks at times, man. I know, like, you know, I don't want to be Sharif, man. But like, you guys remember Sharif on Menace to Society, where he became a Muslim and he was constantly at everybody with, you know, with his newfound knowledge, man. And yeah, you could consider some of the stuff that I'm talking now to be newfound to me. But at the same time, trying to understand that people are in certain spaces and either they don't understand because they want to, or they don't want to, right? Because you got some people who simply don't want to. There's going to be people who cannot be helped. They're going to be people who cannot understand, and it's because they choose not to understand. And then there's another segment of people who don't understand because they're not in that space yet. And I guess what I try to do with, like, lately is, like, when I talk on the show, maybe is to, like, hit the people with, you know, a constant drip of, you know, a little bit of something, and maybe they'll eventually get it in some of the same ways that I did. By listening to people I respect, by reading up on things that I never read about before, by listening to experts on certain situations or certain topics that I wasn't necessarily hearing before, opening myself up to these things, like these ideas that, you know, for a long time I wasn't necessarily open to listening to and grasping and marinating on in my mind. So I guess the thing of it really is, with that letter that Tremaine wrote in, is that what this is really what I kind of wanted to get across was that with all four of those dudes that he was trying to cape for, all four of them, like, because they all are part of the special hotel unit concerned, when I, as far as I'm concerned. But one of the things I should have been saying was, these are the reasons why I don't fuck with these dudes. And it's not, it has nothing to do with me being jealous of them. It has nothing to do with me being necessarily less accomplished than them or anything of that nature. Is that when I see patterns that I used to think were okay being promoted by these dudes who have a platform and people listen to them, and it is to the detriment of people, whether you be Black, Hispanic, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transsexual, whatever. If it's detrimental to people, if your message is detrimental to people, I don't fuck with you. That's it. That's basically what it boils down to. LeVar Ball is a fucking showboat. I don't really care all that much either way about that dude. He's going to be who he is. And much the same way that these other dudes are going to be who they are. But that's really what I should have been saying the other night, Thursday night. That's really what I should have been saying. And even to Tremaine, people are going to come into understandings at their own time. You don't necessarily have to agree with me. You probably won't. You probably choose not to. We probably will never agree on a whole lot of shit. But understand that it ain't got nothing to do with me hating any of those guys. I hate what they're representing, and I hate the message that they're spewing, because it comes at the detriment of other people. And if it comes at the detriment of other people, then I can't fuck with you. And that's what that is. So, yeah, man, I felt like I needed to say that. Real talk, man. Whew. Damn. First 10, 15 minutes of the show, and I'm talking about an email from last week. All right, let's get into the shit, man. Let's get into the meat and potatoes of the show. Now, there was a story that came out. this story came out, I want to say last week, and I didn't get a chance to really talk about it. But apparently there's an officer in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, who's trying to sue Black Lives Matter.
Niggas will live next door to you.
And that is not the clip. God damn it, what the hell happened here?
Niggas will live next.
Okay, that ain't it either.
Fuck face.
That ain't it either. I don't know what the fuck happened to my dun dun dun. All right. So yeah, dun dun dun. Dude tried to sue Black Lives Matter, right? So we're gonna read this story here. Let me pull this up. Where is it? Here we go. This story here comes out of PBS, PBS.org. And the story goes, it says, a personal injury lawyer trying to raise money for her lawsuits against Black Lives Matter and its leaders on behalf of a Baton Rouge police officers was rejected by a crowdfunding website on Sunday. Okay, so this story is about crowdfunding sites like GoFundMe, Patreon, Indiegogo, not accepting crowdfunding campaigns for the lawyers who are trying to bring lawsuits against Black Lives Matter. It says the YouCaring site is a free online fundraising source for people around the country and in Baton Rouge, including residents whose lives were devastated by floods last year or families who have expensive medical needs. It also supports various versions of local and national Black Lives Matter campaigns. But when lawyer Donna Grotner, who has filed two federal lawsuits on behalf of police against Black Lives Matter that target one of his leaders, DeRay McKesson, created a page to raise $20,000 for expenses, YouCaring took it down. In alignment with our mission, we removed this fundraiser because it was not within our community guidelines around promoting harmony. YouCaring Chief Marketing Officer Malai Lay told the NewsHour Weekend in an email, "We are not the right platform to air grievances or engage in contentious disputes or controversial public opinion." Then Grotner created a GoFundMe page instead. GoFundMe did not immediately return a request for comment. Grotner has two lawsuits that accuse Black Lives Matter and his leaders of causing the injuries of two police officers in separate incidents. Now, it's funny that these police officers are out here that like trying to sue the movement. Like Black Lives Matter created this. They're trying to make it out as if Black Lives Matter created the atmosphere that got the police in a position where folks are gunning for the police. Right. It's almost like a chicken and egg kind of argument where they don't necessarily believe that the police overreach, the police being able to kill black people with impunity and get away with it, may have kind of fostered this attitude about how the people feel about the police. That Black Lives Matter is a response to the constant police overreaction to interactions with black people. So it's funny how they're trying to juxtapose. It's like, yeah, we were just killing niggers, and all of a sudden these people want to kill us back. Like, what the fuck, man? We should sue them. How ridiculous is that, right? So it says the first lawsuit was filed on behalf of an unnamed officer who said he was hit by debris during a protest after local police, who are white, killed 37-year-old Alton Sterling, a black man, on July 5th last year. Following Sterling's death, Black Lives Matter organized a Weekend of Rage campaign in line with Take It to the Streets rallies. That movement was organized since its inception around 2012 to rail against the killings of black people. The lawsuit claims that Black Lives Matter and one of its leaders, DeRay McKesson, are responsible for the officer's injury. Though McKesson is not accused of throwing anything, it says the Black Lives Matter activists have incited violence and do not try to calm the crowds. You know what would have kept those crowds from being angry and wanting to tear shit the fuck up? Maybe you not killing Alton Sterling. It was two of you on the ground with this dude. You had him pinned down. Maybe, just maybe, the folks wouldn't have been upset if Alton Sterling was still walking the streets. There's an idea. Sounds crazy, right? Alton Sterling could be walking the streets and the police wouldn't have even got hurt because they didn't incite the situation to begin with. This all starts because of your actions that night, the police officer's actions that night in killing Alton Sterling. And if you want to blame anybody for what happened to you during those uprisings, you should probably be pointing your finger at the two fucking officers who put you in that position. And that's part of the reason why it's so frustrating and it's so, it's maddening that they don't get that they don't understand that they would, instead of pointing inward, instead of going for that self-improvement, instead of being held accountable for your actions like they preach to us, they would much rather point that finger and say, hey, Black Lives Matter, you hurt me. And I'm going to sue, goddammit. And I'm like, what's one of the leaders' names? What's one of the leaders' names? Is that DeRay McKesson? Yeah, that DeRay McKesson guy. Put him on there. I want to get that asshole, him in that goddamn blue vest. Yeah, man, like, fuck out of here. So, yeah, that's going on, man. Another story that I kind of wanted to, talk about. This is actually an update on some shit I talked about, last year, maybe. It had to be at least a year ago. There was a story about these two dudes walked into a Dearborn police department, fully armed with, AR-15s, and they were also wearing ski masks. They walked out of the building and they are living to tell the story today, right? One thing that was, there was an up, well, goddammit, what the fuck happened to this story? Pocket is, you know what, man? I think Pocket is punking me, man. I think Pocket is punking me. Here we go. Damn it, I found it. All right. So, yeah, a number of Dearborn cases have some new developments. According to the city's police chief, two men who brought guns into the Dearborn police station have been convicted for the incident back in February. So it wasn't even a whole year. Damn. Back in February, the men were unhappy about being pulled over and went to the police station heavily armed, wearing bulletproof vests to confront the officers. Streaming the events of Facebook Live, they entered the building and nearly immediately were ordered to get down on the ground. They refused at first, but police were soon able to take them into custody without incident. Now, we just saw on video what happened to Philando Castile. The fact that these dudes had firearms in their hands and it was visible and they were wearing body armor and they had on ski masks and they were in a police station and not a shot was fired is amazing. Amazing. And then on top of that, like, they were streaming this shit live to Facebook. Something kind of tells me that they maybe they wanted to be killed. so that they can stream it on Facebook for whatever nefarious reasons. Like, they wanted to be killed by the police. Maybe it was a suicide attempt by police. I don't know. But I do know this. There's absolutely no fucking reason in the world to be walking into a police station with body armor on and ski mask on and AR-15s on you and not expect nothing bad to happen. Right? I know if had it been me, I wouldn't be on this mic tonight. Let's see. Leonard resident James Baker, 24, and Jackson resident Brandon Vreeland, 40, both white, were charged with carrying a concealed weapon and now both have been convicted. I'm happy to report today that a jury in Wayne County Circuit Court convicted both of them of felony charges, said Dearborn Police Chief Ron Haddad. Haddad says that they will be sentenced in August. In another case, on December 21st, 2016, three guys pretending to be customers, one disguised as a woman wearing a hijab, pistol whipped a jewelry store employee before smashing display cases and making off with a lot of merchandise. Yeah, so that's a whole other story there. But yeah, man, can you imagine any brother walking into a goddamn police station with body armor and ski mask and AR-15s on them and they walked out the fucking building? Amazing, bro. So yeah, I thought that was something we should probably be updated on, man. It does not happen for all of us. Better believe it doesn't. Now, another story to kind of like, this is maybe like a little bit Michigan heavy today, right? But there was another story that I saw where there was this one particular Northern Michigan political official who calls for the killing of all Muslims. So this happened in Kalkaska, Michigan. This is like damn near the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It says a village president in northern Michigan is refusing to apologize for sharing Facebook posts denouncing Islam and calling for the killing of every last Muslim. The Record Eagle of Traverse City reports that Kalkaska village president Jeff Seatling said Monday that he doesn't owe anyone an apology over his Facebook post. Kalkaska is about 230 miles northwest of Detroit. So it's about the same distance as Chicago, about as far as Chicago is from Detroit. The posts were discovered by area native Cindy Anderson, who along with others unsuccessfully sought an apology last month. They're now looking to remove Seatling from office. One post Seatling shared said Muslims are destructive and there is simply no place for them in our world. Seatling also says his comments are protected by the First Amendment and that those who trying to oust him from office are only doing so because they oppose President Donald Trump. Now, first of all, he's a piece of shit, and everybody knows he's a piece of shit, and he should probably be removed from office if these are the attitudes that he has. But you know what's funny is, of course, before I even got to that last sentence, everybody and their mama already knew who this asshole voted for. Everybody and their mama knew it, right? And the interesting thing about this, man, is like I was on a Facebook thread where this story was being reported by the local news, and there was a woman in that thread who said she agrees with everything this dude said and everything else. And you know, she got doxxed. People had found out where the fuck she worked and posted all of her employment information in the thread. And I'm not sure if that woman still has a job today after, you know, agreeing with some of the things that this dude here said about Muslims having no place in our world. And you know, she tried to say, well, you know, my son's a soldier and all these other things, and the Muslims are doing this and the Muslims are doing that. And like, yo, man, your son is a soldier and he's fighting against a certain segment of Muslims. That doesn't mean that all Muslims should be eradicated from the earth. That's ridiculous. That's stupid. So, yeah, I'm not sure if that lady still has a job. This dude shouldn't have a job either. He should be removed from office. And like I said, before I even read that last sentence, I'm pretty sure everybody knew who this guy voted for. And it's interesting how even today you still have a lot of people who voted for Donald Trump who are offended at the fact that people call them racist for having voted for Donald Trump. And they still don't get it that when you align yourself with people like this, or when you align yourself with people who are a part of the KKK and the KKK endorsed Donald Trump, when you find yourself on the same side as the KKK, damn it, being called a racist comes with the fucking territory. That's you. You're going to have to own that one. All like the 53% of white women who thought Donald Trump was a good idea. Yeah, you're going to have to own that one, boo-boo. That's all on you. the people who decided they were going to vote for Donald Trump because they wanted him to get rid of Obamacare, yeah, you's a racist too. Like, this whole idea that we can't call them racist, you know, they were voting for economic issues, they were voting because they were scared about national security and all of that, is bullshit. When the dude you line up with, the dude you voted for, is signing up to get endorsements from the KKK, a lot of these alt-right racist motherfuckers who always go out of their way to denigrate Muslims, denigrate black people, denigrate Hispanic people. Yeah, you's a fucking racist. Own your shit. Own your shit. This dude here is a Trump supporter, right along with your moderate ass. So, yeah, man. That happened. That happened. But, yeah, so we're coming up on some of our segments, man. And this next segment here has become somewhat of a fan favorite. It is our special HOTEP unit. In the black community, pseudo-consciously based offenses are considered especially heinous. In the Yonk right, the dedicated misogynists who perpetuate frauds are members of an elite squad known as a special HOTEP unit. These are their stories. All right, so today in our special HOTEP unit, man, we're going to enter the thyblackman.com website, right? Because apparently whoever wrote this article wasn't necessarily brave enough to put their name on it. So it's just the staff at thyblackman.com, right? And this article is written by a woman. And the woman in this article is trying to make the argument of child support is enslaving black men. So, yeah. So let me read a few paragraphs or a few lines off of this article. It says, last week on my Facebook page, a sister asked me, am I for or against child support? I posted a picture of a black woman holding a wheelbarrow full of money, and the words above the picture said child support, way better than a dad. Then I proceeded to answer the question, what I am for is choosing wisely when deciding to reproduce and deciding who will reproduce you. What I am for is adults being mature if the relationship ends so that the child won't suffer, become molded in the bitterness of its mother, and caught in an emotional tug of war. What I am against is women hustling their wombs specifically for the sole purpose of collecting a child support check. What I am against is child support being limited or perceived as financial assistance. Child support means to support your child mentally, emotionally, spiritually, being there for events, listening to them, encouraging them, showing them love, and teaching them lessons so that they won't have to learn lessons in the streets. What I am against is black men not given a chance to willingly give, contribute, and add to the life of their child or children before the mother of his child or children runs down to the overseer to handcuff him with a child support order. I am against brothers being violated in such a system that was designed to destroy the black family and children being treated as assets and property of the mother with no regard to the father. Now, this screams... pick me so bad. So bad. Now, interestingly enough, like she says something about it was designed to destroy the black family, as if black people are the only ones, like as if black people have exclusivity on the child support system. We don't. It makes the argument that women are using children for financial gain. Right. The majority of women are using these children for financial gain. It makes the assumption that women aren't necessarily vetting these men properly when they decide to have a child by these men. Right. And here's a couple things, man. One is like, yo, sometimes a dude can be on, you know, like a dude can present a representative really well. Right. A dude can tell you all the things he thinks you wants to hear. A dude can present himself as the person he thinks you want to be. You want him to be. And the minute a pregnancy comes into play, a dude will switch that shit the fuck up on you. I've seen a couple of my partners do this. I've seen friends do this. I've seen family members do this. It happens. It happens. Not all brothers who are out here with child support orders on them got undeserved. Like, it's very, you're going to find, you'll be hard pressed here at the Spare Report to hear me talk about dudes having undeserved child support cases on them. And if it's not your child, if it's not your kid, then yeah, you probably should not be paying child support. You should not be paying child support if it's not your kid. But if it is your kid, then you probably should be paying child support. If you're, if the woman you had a child with feels as if she needs to go to the court to make sure you're going to do what you're supposed to do, it's not saying a whole lot about you sometimes. Sometimes. Not all the time. Sometimes. Right? I know this is a stickler for a lot of fellas, man. I hear... You know, some of the, like, the horror stories, like I hear them. I don't necessarily, it's one of those things where, like, yeah, this is your side of it. I'm sure she's probably on the other side of it with a whole different perspective on this. And, like, I also hear dudes bragging about how much they're getting off with the child support. Like, I've heard dudes talk about, yo, I only pay, like, $40 a week. And they're bragging about it. I pay $40 a week on child support. And you're bragging about this shit. Like, you do know, like, you probably blow more than $40 a week just in drinks. Like, these are some of the same, you know, sometimes it'd be some of the same dudes who are talking about, yo, I got a fifth of Hennessy, and it's a fifth of Hennessy every week. Your kid isn't worth more than a fifth of Hennessy or maybe a gallon of Hennessy or that night at the club or whatever. You'll blow more in the club than you would on your own kid. That happens too. Well, let me read some more from this story, man. It says, what I am against is the bitter mama syndrome. Bitter because the relationship ended. The child's first words are probably my daddy ain't shit because that's what he hears all the time. I am against mothers turning their hearts, the hearts of the children away from the father because her heart didn't get what it wanted. How about sometimes that kid knows their father ain't shit because their father ain't never showed them shit. See, I think we got it. Like, we don't give children enough credit for being the smart little human beings that they are. Children are much more perceptible than a lot of adults give them credit for. Kids have feelings. Kids learn what's right and what's wrong. Kids can feel what's right, what feels right to them, what feels wrong to them. Kids get a certain vibe about certain people. They know, kids from a very young age know who they like and who they don't. It doesn't necessarily take a mother to badmouth a father in order for a child to feel bad or not feel good about their father. I use my own example with my mom. My mother never spoke ill of my father. Not once. I grew up and I recognized through my own interactions with him that I didn't necessarily fuck with him like that. And then when I grew up and I tried to like foster a better relationship, it wasn't reciprocated. So at a certain point, these children understand and they know that their fathers might not necessarily be shit. And it doesn't always take a mother saying so for that to happen. She says, I also understand that bitterness is not just limited to just women, that men can become scorned and vengeful and attempt to drag mothers through court as a means of being vindictive. What I'm emphatically against is a message that, I'm sorry. I understand that not all women seek child support and maintain to the best of their ability. I understand that if you're on state assistance, the state will go after the father and does not need your permission to do so. I understand that there are some women that are understanding of the financial climate for black men. And while that does not excuse the father from his obligation, the mother still helps facilitate a healthy relationship between the father and the child. I also understand that there are men that are not fulfilling their duty, but the men that are rarely get any airplay. Now, I think the funny thing about this is we hear this stat all the time about over 70% of black children are born to a single parent household, right? We hear this a lot. We hear this with a lot of conservative spaces. We hear that in a lot of conservative spaces. And you hear a lot of hotep niggas saying this shit. Well, you know, 70% of our black children are born to a single mother. And these women are educating these children in a fucked up way. And this is why we in the situation that we are in right now. That's why the hood's so fucked up, because ain't no fathers around. Which is bullshit. Which is bullshit. And the reason why it's bullshit is because we know through study that some, like, black fathers are some of the more active fathers out of all fathers in the United States. Understand this. Just because somebody is single doesn't mean that they're raising their child alone. Single is a status, like a marital status. Like, are you single? If you're not married, you single. Bottom line, if you're not married, you single. You dating, you still single. Kicking it, still single. Situationship, still single. All of these different names come back to you still being single in the eyes of the law, right? So if that man and that woman decided they don't even want to get married, but they want to start a family, and they don't want the attachment of the marriage, and they co-parent this kid, that child still has both of their parents. That child still is growing up being nurtured and being loved on both sides of his family. Now, whether or not the parents decide that they want to commit to each other in the ways of marriage, something entirely different. But I think we got to get away from this whole idea that black fathers ain't shit. And I feel like she, even in this particular article, she's like, well, they don't get the shine that they deserve. Like, yeah, we perpetuate that sometimes. These messages perpetuate that. Even Hoteps perpetuate this notion that black women are irresponsible and they're having wanton sex, unprotected sex, irresponsible sex, and that's why we got all these babies running around with no daddies. 72% of black kids are born to a single parent or a single mother. When really, it's a lot of involved fathers around. A lot of them. The vast majority of them are involved in their children's lives. Matter of fact, let me see if I can pull this story up, because this was something that actually came up a while ago. It says black dads are doing it the best of all. I think this article comes from the New York Times. Charles Blow wrote this. It says one of the most persistent statistical bludgeons of people who want to blame black people for any injustice or inequity they encounter in this is this. According to data from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, in 2013, in nearly 72% of births to non-Hispanic black women, the mothers were unmarried. That has been used ad nauseum since that came out by conservatives and Hoteps. It's time we stop perpetuating that fucking notion that simply because the father isn't married to the mother, that the father is uninvolved in the life of that child. It's time we stop perpetuating that message. And this sister going out here, like, putting this shit out about, you know, the putting this message out, I think warrants her induction into the special Hotep unit. But not only that, that website deserves entry into the special Hotep unit. The child support system is not enslaving black men. Unfortunately, as with anything, and this isn't just a black people thing, there's a lot of white dudes, Hispanic dudes, Indian dudes who are also not involved in their children's lives, who are brought before that child support court, and they have the same issues that black men do. It's just the reality of the world, man. When you have sex with a woman, this is basic biology 101. When you have sex with a woman, you should be having sex with a woman that you know the possibility of having sex with her means you could be having a child with her every time, even with a condom. And knowing that going in kind of helps you a lot. It kind of helps you, like, yeah. There may be an off chance that we might have a kid. And if you decided you're going to have sex with that woman, you probably should be okay. You got to get it okay in your mind that, yeah, that might be all right for you. Now, it's funny, like, the onus is always put on the sisters as to whether or not they were responsible and whether or not they should have vetted these men more properly before they gave their bodies to them. But, hey, man, you very well could have a child by a woman you don't necessarily like or respect simply because you wanted to get your dick wet that night. When you understand that you could possibly have a child with that woman, if you can't fathom having a child with that woman, then you probably shouldn't be having sex with her. Now, I know that might not necessarily be realistic to a lot of y'all, but at the end of the day, that's the honest truth. You might have to get yourself you might have to get your mind right to that. Yeah, it's possible that this woman could have my child. Just is what it is, man. But yes. What's the name of that website? Thyblackman.com. They've gotten their entry into the special HOTEP unit.
In the black community, pseudo-consciously based offenses are considered especially heinous. In the Yonk Right, the dedicated misogynists who perpetuate frauds are members of an elite squad known as a special HOTEP unit. These are their stories.
All right. So now we got this. we got some craziness going on, man. There's a. It's crazy. As a matter of fact,
I am Annie.
Auto fucking start, man. This shit is crazy. And it deserves to be in our What in Blue Blazers segment.
What in Blue Blazers is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say Blue
Blazers? All right. This lady thinks that she is the woman who Michael Jackson was singing about in Smooth Criminal. Her name is Annie.
Well, I'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
She thinks the song is about her. And she went on Dr. Phil to talk about why she thinks the song is about her. Check this out.
Michael Jackson's song, Smooth Criminal. Michael mentions my name 46 times in his song. About the time Michael Jackson wrote the song Smooth Criminal, I was in an abusive relationship. On the night that I was being abused, I became Annie from Smooth Criminal. So she ran into the bedroom, she was struck down, it was her doom. And I did. I ran into the bedroom and I was struck down. This paragraph really speaks to me because it brings back, it's like it just happened yesterday. While this was happening, I saw a limousine outside the window. I believe it could have been Michael Jackson in that limousine. I know that Michael Jackson had family that lived in the area. Annie, are you okay? Why do you think he said that? Because he wanted to know if I was okay. Why would Michael Jackson put so much emphasis on my name if he didn't want me to figure it out? I've called Quincy Jones twice. I talked to some lady. I told her that I'm Annie. I'm the girl in the song. And then I heard someone in the background say, hang up the phone. There is a lot of friction between me and my daughters. They don't believe that I am Annie. And right now I'm homeless. I hang out a lot at this donut shop.
How it feels to be homeless? It's not a good feeling.
I've been stolen from all my life. Even my life story from Smooth Criminal was stolen from me and I didn't get anything. I want the rights to my song. I am Annie.
Okay. All right, that shit is batshit crazy. I'm sorry, man. Like, shit. Like, I didn't know, like, the homelessness part. I didn't even get that far the first time I watched this. And I'm not even trying to make light of the fact that she was in an abusive relationship. But the fact that she believes that Michael Jackson was writing a song about her and that Michael Jackson was out in a limousine outside of her home and that Michael Jackson said her name 46 times in the song and that she went so far to call Quincy Jones twice and somebody was like, yo, man, hang up the motherfucking phone. Like, the fact that she thinks that, like, even her daughters are like, mama, it ain't about you. The song ain't about you. And she's like, well, why would Michael Jackson keep saying my name in this song as if she's the only person named Annie all anywhere in the fucking world? Like, this lady is bat shit crazy. And why is she on Dr. Phil? Dr. Phil isn't really a doctor. Sort of like Umar Johnson isn't really a doctor either. Yeah. Yeah. That shit's wild. That's really all I got with that one. Like, I ain't got no clever shit to say about that whatsoever. I thought it was crazy as fuck. For like, she really believes it. She really does believe that Michael Jackson was singing to her. And now she's trying to get paid off of Smooth Criminal. She thinks that the song, which she has no writing credits for, which she has no performance credits for, she thinks she's going to get paid off of the Smooth Criminal song because Michael Jackson said Annie 46 times. Whew. Yeah, that's a special kind of crazy right there. But yeah, this has been your Blue Blazers segment.
What in Blue Blazers is going on out here?
This nigga just say Blue
Blazers. All right, so we're coming up on our last couple segments, man. We are up to our Ass Hat of the Week.
Yo, We got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And today's ass hat of the week, man. You know, we had one, but breaking news. All right. Now, our ass hat of the week this week is none other than the Pied Piper of R&Sleaze, R. Kelly. Now, yeah, the original ass hat of the week this week was going to be Donald Trump Jr. But no, yeah, this story came out today. And there's a story that came out of BuzzFeed that said R. Kelly is holding women against their will in a cult, parents told police, right? And the man who wrote this article, Jim DeRogatis, was also the man who used to write for the Chicago Sun-Times. He broke the story about the videotape of R. Kelly involved in a sex acts with a 14-year-old girl. That tape was originally sent to Jim DeRogatis while he was with the Chicago Sun-Times. And according to this story, because I'm going to read from this story a little bit. It's a long story, so I'm not going to get everything in this. But according to the story, it says Kelly has sold nearly 60 million albums during a 25-year career. And though his relevance is fading somewhat from the heyday of I Believe I Can Fly and Trapped in the Closet, he remains a major star in high demand for concerts, endorsements. Who the fuck is getting R. Kelly to endorse them? I wonder. Television and radio appearances and glossy magazine profiles. When he's not performing, Kelly splits his time between a suburban Atlanta home and Trump Tower in Chicago. See, I knew he wasn't shit before, but now that I know he actually paying Trump to stay in that motherfucker building, he ain't shit even more now. Fuck that dude. Extensive interviews with Mac Jones and McGee and a wait a second. Okay, extensive interviews with Mac Jones and McGee and a review of legal documents by BuzzFeed News paint a picture of what Kelly's life offstage is like today. The women in Kelly's entourage initially think this is R. Kelly. I'm going to live a lavish lifestyle, said Mac, who worked as Kelly's personal assistant for a year and a half starting in 2013 and has remained in touch with some members of his inner circle. No, you have to ask for food. You have to ask to go use the bathroom. Kelly is a master at mind control. He's a puppet master. Jones and McGee both said they lived with Kelly and had sexual relationships with the star at different times over the past 5 years. Before leaving, their documentation of this time is limited. However, as they said, Kelly controlled their phone and social media use while they were under his roof, and they were not allowed to take photos with Kelly or of the rooms they were living in. Now, the interesting thing about that is that during the time where he was being investigated and was on trial about the sexual molestation of that 14-year-old girl, it was very critical that they pointed the room where he was at because it was a room in his home. Now, how he still got off of that fucking charge, no one will ever, well, we all know. It was in Chicago, and he has a shit ton of fans in Chicago. But that room was pointed out because it was a room that was very similar to that room in a home that he once owned. Jones and it says, according to Mac, Jones and McGee, the women living in Kelly's Duluth, Georgia guest house or his Chicago recording studio last summer included a 31-year-old den mother who trained newcomers on how Kelly liked to be pleasured sexually. She had been best friends since high school with the girl in the videotape for which Kelly was tried in 2008. She recently parted ways with Kelly, these sources say. A 25-year-old woman who also has been part of Kelly's scene for 7 years. A recent arrival, a 19-year-old model who has been photographed in public with Kelly and named on music gossip websites, a rarity among the women in his circle. An Atlanta songwriter who began her relationship with Kelly around 2009 when she was 19. She's now 26. And an 18-year-old singer from Polk County, Florida. Mac said the Florida singer is Kelly's favorite, his number one girl. Mac, Jones, and McGee claim that women who live with Kelly, who he calls his babies, are required to call him daddy and must ask his permission to leave the Chicago recording studio or their assigned rooms in the guest house. Kelly rents near his own rented mansion in suburban Atlanta. A black SUV with a burly driver behind the wheel is almost always parked outside both locations. Kelly confiscates the women's cell phones, they said, so that they cannot contact their friends and family. He gives them new phones that they are only allowed to use to contact him or others with his permission. Kelly films his sexual activities, McGee and Jones said, and shows the videos to the men in his circle. Now, you know, a weird thing about this, man, this is, as we know, with like patterns of abuse, is that one of the first things that a lot of abusive people do is try to cut you off from your family and your friends. They try to cut you off and sever those ties so that they have full control over you. And you can't have any, you can't really ask for help because you don't have any way to contact the people who could help you. And you are totally dependent upon them for everything. It's classic. Classic. It's classic abusive behavior. Let's see. She says, McGee said, R. Kelly is the sweetest person you'll ever want to meet, but Robert is the devil. Of course, the law says that consenting adults may take part in any relationship they want, no matter how non-traditional. Welfare checks by both police in Illinois and Georgia in the past year didn't lead to any charges. In January, the aspiring singer from Georgia told Cook County Police that she was fine and did not want to be bothered. And all of the women in Kelly's inner circle are of legal age. The age of consent is 17 in Illinois and 16 in Georgia. Despite Kelly's history of allegations against him regarding his sexual conduct with women, he was last tried in 2008 in Illinois, where he was acquitted on 14 charges of making child pornography. The case, which took a record 6.5 years to go to trial in Chicago, focused only on a single videotape that prosecutors alleged showed him having sex with a 14-year-old girl. While he was a reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times, this reporter received the tape anonymously and turned it over to the police, called by Kelly's attorney to testify. He took the Fifth rather than reveal sources. Now, you know, I wanted to find a part of this story here because there was a part where I thought it was really fucked up. And as a matter of fact, let's see. Where is it? Okay, I can't find it. But here's the thing. There was a parent who took their daughter to go see R. Kelly because they wanted R. Kelly to help her with her musical career, right? And the reason that I think this fucked up, and this particular parent, I also would put in the ass hat of the week this week as well. The reason I think it's fucked up is that despite knowing what R. Kelly has been accused of, what R. Kelly has been tried for, despite the history and the stories that everybody has been privy to and aware of, you still decided to take your young daughter to R. Kelly to try to get her broken into the music business. And now you're claiming that your daughter is being held in this cult-like setting in R. Kelly's home and you don't have contact with her and you're worried about her. And you were worried about her well-being. And you didn't think it would happen to you. You didn't think it would happen to your daughter. You didn't think that this was something that was possible for you. Because I can watch my daughter when I'm with him. You know, like, how fucking stupid could you be? How stupid could you be to think that that was a great idea? Of all the people that you could have possibly tried to get to break your daughter into the music business, you chose that dude. For those parents, I gotta be honest, I have very little sympathy whatsoever. Very little. Interestingly enough, because like I said, this is a really long article and I'm not gonna read the entire thing. But interestingly enough, of course, you know, with every, you know, detractor, there's a supporter. R. Kelly has his share of supporters, quite a few of them. We all know some, right? We all know an R. Kelly supporter. They're rabid fans. They love his music. They defend him to no end. Sort of like Umar Johnson supporters defend him to no end, despite the fact that we know he ain't no doctor. And despite the fact that we know he been like milking them for this damn donation money and the school ain't coming. And sort of like the Donald Trump with his income taxes and the Russian collusion and all these things. They think that people are just out to get these dudes, right? Like it's us against the world. Like they're just out to get him. They don't understand and all those other things. And one of the things that I think a lot of us have to come to understand when it comes to R. Kelly supporters is this. They have made peace with themselves, that they enjoy his music much more than they care about him molesting and or sexually assaulting and or being involved in sexual inappropriate sexual relationships with underage women or underage girls. They've made peace with that in their heads. But they get much more enjoyment. They care much more about the enjoyment that they get from listening to R. Kelly music than thinking about what R. Kelly does in his private time with underage girls, and they're cool with it. They made peace with themselves with that. Like, you see it all the time. Like, they try to separate R. Kelly's music from R. Kelly the person, right? And you also see people talk about, well, you know, Marvin Gaye was, you know, he was messing with underage girls. And what about Elvis? He married, you know, Lisa Marie Presley when she, not Lisa Marie Presley, that was his daughter. What was her mama's name? Priscilla. He married Priscilla Presley. Like, he had her like when she was like 14 years old, as if that also makes it okay. Like, that's the thing that I think I find so hilarious, man. Like, when you point out these examples, the people who are talking about this shit being fucked up aren't saying these other examples are okay. They're all fucked up. So, yeah, man. R. Kelly in the news again for some of the for some crazy sexual shit. And I'm not surprised in the least. I'll say this. Whatever they accuse R. Kelly of at this point, man, I just automatically believe he did that shit. That's just how I roll now. It is what it is at this point. But yeah, R. Kelly and his fans and those parents are the ass hat of the week here this week here on the Span Report.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
But we do have a champ.
The champ is here. 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 The champ is here.
All right, our champ of the week this week here on the Span Report is this gonna surprise a lot of y'all. This is gonna surprise quite a few of y'all, man. It is Arya Stark of House Stark from Game of Thrones. That's the champ.
That'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
Now, I know some of y'all are probably like, yo, Span, Arya Stark isn't a real person. Arya Stark is a fictional character on a top-rated HBO show. She shouldn't be getting the champ of the week. Now, I'll tell you guys this. I make the motherfucking rules on who gets champ of the week here on the Span Report. No, you know what, man? As a fan of the Game of Thrones series, I must say that I am so proud of the growth of Arya Stark, man. The way that season 7 of Game of Thrones opened this year is fucking magnifique, man. Real talk. Now, I don't want to spoil this because maybe some of the time, by the time you guys listen to this, maybe you haven't seen season 7, the opening episode. Maybe you're probably watching it tonight as I'm recording this. I don't want to spoil this for you. I'm not going to play the entire scene, but I am going to play a bit of the end of the scene. And this is Arya Stark at her most gangster. This is why I'm like so proud of like her entire apprenticeship with the man with no name. What the fuck was his name? I forget his name. The Faceless Man. The Faceless Man. That was his name. I'm glad that like she fucked with him and she learned so much from him, and now she's putting some of those talents to use, man. Check out what Arya Stark had to say in this scene, man. Check this out.
When people ask you what happened here, tell them the North remembers. Tell them winter came for House Frey.
All right. Yeah, see? That's all you get. That's all you get. I'm not going to spoil it for everybody. But yeah, man. I fucks with Arya, man. Arya Stark is a goddamn goat right now. She's the MVP. And she's the champ this week here on the Spirit Poor Podcast. Yeah, man. But yeah, it's time for me to get out of here, man. It's like 11:30. I missed the news and shit. But before I go, of course, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Spirit of Poor Podcast. Let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. I'll play them on the show. Respond right here on the show. Hit me up on the email. The email to the show is feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. And of course, I'll read those emails and respond to those emails here live on the show, man. You can also call the show while we're doing the show live. I forgot to mention that. You can call the show while we're doing it live here on Crowdcast.io. So when you're in the chat room or whatever else, man, you can call in and we can chop it up while we're doing this. Also, follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead and follow me there. Join the Span Report Facebook group. You can go ahead and do that. Join the Facebook group and chat amongst yourselves and all of that good stuff, right? You can do that. You can also give me a 5-star review on iTunes and or Stitcher. The 5-star reviews get read on the show, man. It's very much appreciated for those of you guys who go ahead and do that. And for all of your Span Report needs, go to www.thespanreport.com. Vote in the polls, leave comments, watch the show, the whole nine, man. Everything's pretty much available for you over at thespanreport.com, man. So you can go there. It's your one-stop shop for everything Span Report. But yeah, I got to get out of here, y'all. So until next time, fam. Peace.